As we gaze upon your mated relationship in your culture, we find that there is a great need for understanding of the true nature of relationships that is lacking among your people. To become mated is to become one, one flesh, one life and one spirit. If one is not able to commit one's respect and admiration, either physically, mentally, emotionally or spiritually, then the relationship is hampered from the beginning by the lack of the other's good opinion. 64 We need to see ourselves as complete within ourselves, for no marriage can give us completion. We do encounter our husbands or wives along our path, but they are not the piece of the puzzle which will make us totally complete. That piece is within us, and can never be found outside of us, no matter how hard we may look. If we could but realize this, then we would be happy. 295, Chapter 9, Sex and Relationships. In the knowledge that no one else can make us complete and whole, only ourselves, and we could enjoy another person's company without the added pressure of living up to all of our expiations. And this is the tremendous lesson I have observed. This point of view takes the pressure off of our mate, because he or she can never live up to our expiations. And it furthermore takes the pressure off of us in living up to their dream woman or man. 65 If we are not able to get across how we feel by expressing our emotions, we can always fall back on clear communication. Even if muted, emotion will be expressed by those willing to talk and share. It's almost like a very wonderful slow dance, both individuals joining together to dance to the same rhythm, both blending their own style to match the others. To be free to self-express without hindering the other, to become united in dance of communication, this feels good. 66 Tolerance is a word that can be very cold and wrenching, as when we tolerate something that we do not like and do not approve of, but are aware that we must accept. Nonetheless, it is a word and a quality I would invoke in marriage, with its partner, mercy. For more than in relationships, in marriage we are attempting to give to the other our full selves, not the best of ourselves, not our Sunday selves. Karen Eck gives a good example of how to be a tolerant and merciful partner. This relationship has its base on another level. When it has gotten rough, and it has gotten very rough, I remind my husband he can deal with it, whatever the issue, with me or deal with it down the road, and I have, after long inner work, come to be okay with the fact that if he chooses not to now, in this life, work through these issues with me, we will take it up next round. 67 It is easy to talk about the beauty of marriage. There are inspiring and uplifting aspects to the vows to live a sacramental and holy life with our partners. Christians are married with the words naming the husband as the Christ, and the wife as the Church. And it is delightful to see these archetypal roles of provider and lover from the male, and home and sustenance from the female. And all these ideals are true and wonderful, however skewed our society has made them seem. But marriage is also hard, hard work. It is not so hard at first, perhaps, for we may be good at keeping that Sunday side of self forward. We also may be so oriented to goals, like gaining a home and starting a family, that we are too busy to do more than our work and our duties. But houses are just strewures, and children never. 296, Chapter 9, Sex and Relationships made things simpler, and as we get to know each other's smallest preferences and thoughts, we can become very picky with each other, sensitized to each other's perceived faults and ready to criticize. Meanwhile, our perfectly good mates are seeing us with those same clearer eyes. It becomes easier to have an adversary relationship than a loving partnership. And it always remains all too easy to separate, and all too challenging to come into harmony. Yet this persistence of hard work is what separates good marriages from bad, and more, those who are still married from those who have separated and divorced. I do not know how to write about marriage in a way that strips it of these inherent and persistent difficulties. I can only say that for me, the most golden times of my life have been in the context of a mated relationship. For me, it remains a state which is like an immense present, a marvelous gift which I am forever in the process of opening. Infidelity in marriage is even more damaging to trust than infidelity in unmarried relationships. for the life has been committed, there has been a promise made to live in fidelity, made in public and in front of a powerful authority, either the deity itself or the minister or judge that is performing the ceremony. Yet it does happen. The student of metaphysics will, for the most part, attempt to ignore the promptings that are random and continually to replace the attention upon the mated relationship. The male shall always fail to do this perfectly. The female may attempt to be forgiving, understanding and so forth, but again, failure is inevitable. My friends, in this way as in all others, you have each other to help each other, and it is most encouraged by us that each attempt to see that dynamic that sexuality offers with a merciful and ruthful gaze, to be quick to forgive and to be willing again and again to attempt to trust. When there is discord at this level, much energy is blocked, and it is usual for students of metaphysics that they will be blocked to some extent at this level. We have spoken to you before concerning the dangers of working in consciousness without first clearing those lower energies, and we remind each again, the first work is that work which is the lowest, the basest and the most fundamental. The first holiness is here, where feet meet earth, where spirit meets flesh. Here, at the level where entities are born, here, where entities express their deepest physical nature, here is the beginning of a good work. 68 I know it is possible to forgive infidelity because my first husband took a lover at one dark point in his flight to escape the bonds of his humanity and our marriage. I knew that he was terribly unhappy and that I had no hope. 297, Chapter 9, Sex and Relationships of Comforting Him. And so I accepted his infidelity, hoping it would bring him some peace and happiness, which it emphatically did not. It proved to be one more sorrow to his heart. I forgave and forgave again, although my heart was wrenched from me, or so it felt. Had the marriage been able to survive, I could have forgotten the incident, both because it was a short one, and because he began to treat me better. It was not what destroyed the marriage. My first husband's genuine hatred of marriage itself brought the joining to a close. In a way, I would have preferred not to know about the whole incident, but I was too aware of him not to know what he was going through. For those who may have strayed once, only to regret it most deeply, it is an option to refrain from sharing this error with the mate. However, if it weighs too heavily upon the soul, it does need to be shared. Some people have a very hard time forgiving infidelity, no matter how isolated or shallow, as opposed to habitual or serious, so be very clear about the consequences of telling all before you do so. There are levels of infidelity. Flirting is just as painful to me as outright sexual promiscuity. My present husband's request, in the 80s, for an open marriage was a great source of pain to me. He asked for that state early in our married life, never wed on the feeling, and became a total fan of monogamy as our sacramental sexual life blossomed. But what he was expressing at the time was a desire for freedom. I knew that no man ever stayed faithful because his wife asked him to, so I simply agreed to an open marriage, feeling great relief and delight when he himself grew enough as a human being that he began to perceive freedom as the chance to be free with me, and began to develop that married feeling which is so central to a long-standing and healthful relationship. It all comes down to our sexuality. A man or woman can see their mate as a sexual partner among many on this planet, or the sexual partner who epitomizes all of the sexual polarity of the planet in one handy, single being. I believe women are more oriented by the culture to perceive their husbands in this sacramental way, as the Lord, in the sense of the Lord and the Lady in magical workings of Wicca, nature magic and ceremonial magic, than men are, but I also have seen that both sexes are equally capable of achieving this level of sexual desire for their one puff mate. This has almost nothing to do with how we look, thank heavens, and everything to do with how we treat each other. The most abstruse realms of sacramental sex are open to those couples who come through the fire and are able to see each other as their puff partners. Further, there is life-giving energy in such shining play. I sincerely feel that carefully offered sacramental sex powered our groups conter with those of Ra, and powers both gyms and my life even today. 298, Chapter 9, sex and relationships sometimes, the best attempt at marriage will fail. Melissa says, he needed a separation. I came to understand that, regardless of my fears and needs, I had to give him that. Everything attendant to a separation has occurred, including allowing in the energies of other people romantically, etc. This has been intensely painful for me. We remain very close, in far we speak a number of times a day. This whole experience has forced me to look much more closely at myself, my so-called faith in something, my spirituality and emotional mental discipline, my strength of Chirua. I feel so shaky some days, and it doesn't surprise me that on the particular day your correspondence arrived, I was doubting once again whether or not I wanted to remain on this earth. 69 and 169 echoes, went through a horrendously painful divorce that left me feeling hollowed out and not understanding why my deeply felt trust and faith that led me to give up my security in Europe and follow this man here has left me so bereaved of love and support. 70 We can hear the heartbreak and pain in these events, the separation of what had been intended to last a lifetime. Those of you who assure us that even if it ends in divorce, such a committed relationship has been worthwhile. We speak now of the concept of failure in relationships. The promise of marriage is often ended with the equivalent of a statement of withdrawal or divorce. What happens then to the covenant in metaphysical terms? It is still valuable. It is valuable inasmuch as and insofar as the seeker was sincere in claiming the metaphysical promise for itself. It is the nature of illusion to entrap, deceive and thwart one. And often it does occur that promises are broken, marriages end. Yet, metaphysically, the strength of the promise, the strength of the will to serve in abiding by the promise, do much to strengthen and balance and regularize one's inner seeking. There is, of course, no way for one who goes to the place of the promise and makes it to know for sure that he will be able to keep it, for within the illusion that you experience, various forces may be brought to bear which may break apart your foundation, and, shaken from the roots that you have put down, you simply drift away, and in your confusion you wonder if there was any use to all that you experienced. We assure you that there is a great deal of use to all the attempts that have been made to keep the promises that you have made. Each day, each hour, if a failure seems to have occurred, it is well to. 299, Chapter 9, Sex and Relationships. Remember that the failure is within the illusion, but the promise is eternal, not a promise to be kept eternally, returning to one mate over and over again throughout the endless cycle of time, but rather a light which is eternal made by two which have become one metaphysically, which have sought together to master a. 71 I find it very hopeful that we are all in relationship with each other, whether or not we seem to succeed fully in expressing the qualities and ideals we hope to offer each other. We are drawn to each other as a first step towards becoming one, and through many lifetimes, I would imagine we have many star-crossed loves and passions, that are all true in their own way. The end of each such experience is to become truly unified, as the social memory complex we are striving to become in the next density, where we are all in love with all others, and accept each other as we are, though giving each other the right to boundaries of uniqueness and personal worth. May each of us thrive in our relationships and bring all that we are and have to them, for they truly are a great part of the wealth of this experience of earthly life. 87. 2. Chapter 10, Societal Issues, Money. It does not take long after our incarnations beginning for us to form the opinion that money is a powerful thing. Our parents seem to work to acquire it and think carefully before spending it. As children, we find ourselves being judged by how much of it we are able to spend on our clothes and our appearance, especially as we enter into that long phase of youth which is heavily involved in being in. It may be possible to be popular without the right sort of clothing, the right possessions, the ability to go where it is cool to go and do in things, but it is not particularly probable. As a child I became very aware that our family did not have sufficient funds to furnish me with what I felt I needed in the way of the right clothes and gadgets. I developed a desire for having this marvelous substance that seemed to open so many doors. As I continued to mature, I became aware of the negative aspects of money. When I was 13, my kidneys failed, and as a result I was in the hospital for 2 straight months, and then at the doctor's office every day for 5 more months being given shots. This resulted in a staggering bill. I felt very guilty about costing my parents money they did not have, and in my first attempt to create money, I made up a tray of what I thought were beautiful artificial flower corsages, each one handmade from wood fiber by my careful toil. No one who owned a store near my home was willing to sell them for me. In my helpless frustration, I became far more aware of the power of money, and the devilish unfairness of not having enough of it. As I grew to adulthood, I explored ever deeper the stewardship of what funds I was able to acquire, and the very disturbing sense of evil that I often whiffed, standing at the sidelines of the news of the day and watching people with large amounts of money wield that power for their own good, and not necessarily others' weal. One thing I did not question was the need to work for money. The work ethic was drilled into me, and I saw the need in my everyday life. My family's acceptance of the need to work for money was complete. Further, I learned to take pride in my work, and to this day, whether it is for money or not, in any effort I make, I attempt to give it my best. Young ones within your culture are taught to work, to give a good effort, to follow certain paths in order to further ambition. The soul is taught that worth is in what one does, and so each growing spirit faces. 303, Chapter 10, Societal Issues. The self attempts to find that which will earn the money, attempts to prepare the self for doing this, and then spends the life following a certain career, profession. One, blessed is the person whose natural path leads her through schooling or preparation of another kind to a job or career that pays her bills and fulfills the needs of her life. For most of us, at least at times, the supply of funds fails. The path from learning to working is not straight, and there is a real question as to how helpful a thing money really is. We can fall prey to money worries very easily, in spite of living in an affluent culture. Those of you who say, the question of supply is perhaps the deepest chasm of irrational concern which seduces your peoples. In the face of this, we simply suggest that as the healthy regard for money is in being sure of the daily bread and then allowing concerns to fall away as appropriate, that, each simply move, each day or each time he feels this concern, into a conscious reorientation. To this is sound and biblical advice, following, as it does, the wording of the Lord's Prayer, in which we are told to pray only for that which we need this day, for our daily bread. We definitely need a certain amount of supply in order to buy the food to nourish our bodies, and to shelter them. All other concerns can and will be handled as best we can. It narrows our area of concern to a size we can handle. This does offer some immediate peace of mind, but the question remains, how to evaluate this money that we spend so much time earning and then spending. It is very tempting to try to store up as much of it as possible in an effort to be secure, but in truth, we are never truly secure. If our money is in a bank, the bank can fail. If it is in a stock market, the market can fail. If it is under our mattress, the currency itself can fail. Events can occur, such as a protracted illness, which absorb our last dime. If we are devoted overly much to amassing this source of monetary supply, we are as understandable, and as silly, as the cartoon character, Uncle Scrooge, rolling in our pile of coins, but not necessarily being good stewards of the energy and power we have accumulated. Security is a wonderful thing, and I do work to conserve funds so that my life might be secure financially. But there is a sharp difference between appreciating what money can do, and loving money. Appreciation and conservation of supply is prudent. Love of money is, as the first epistle of Timothy says, the root of all evil. 3. Joseph Combs says, the security you felt is an illusion. Tomorrow your dollars may be worthless. Your land could fall out of your hands for a million different. 304, Chapter 10, Societal Issues. Reasons. You can wake up dead tomorrow. There are no guarantees you will make it to retirement, much less retire and much less live happily ever after. the odds are you can live happily ever after, but only if you let go of the bars of your cage, the past, and set your sights on where you are going, the future. The future is eternity. For a spiritual approach to money, then, could even include claiming that money itself is evil, or at least the love of amassing money. Certainly the teacher known as Jesus felt that the universe would provide what was truly needed, and sent his disciples out on the road with no money whatever, and ever since the advent of monastic communities, poverty, along with chastity and obedience, has been one of the three vows taken by those who follow the monastic path by joining such communities. However, to my mind it is far more near the truth of the situation to see money as a kind of energy that comes to us in varying amounts, but that which, whatever the amount, we can look upon as an energy is potentially spiritual as sexual or any other kind of energy. It simply depends on what we do with the money, in our minds, and in our irons. To better gain access to a right relationship with money, it is well to place concerns about finances within that holy of holies which lies within your deep mind. The consciousness of oneness is a consciousness of infinite plenty. The creation is full of all that there is. Every need has that which can meet the need. This consciousness of infinite supply sheds a welcome light upon the soul besieged by financial worries. But what if you were to alter the term money and subsume it in the term energy? When the term energy is used, this may aid somewhat, for that which is energy does not need to be hoarded, but rather expresses its nature in its potentiation. Thusly, the general rule of thumb is that entities may do that which they must to gain enough energy to survive and be comfortable. This energy may be transmuted by those who see the sprum of energies so that many things become money. And we feel sure that each can think of many instances where seemingly impossible things have occurred because of the trading of goods and services rather than the insistence upon some single form of energy. 5. The idea here is to release our thoughts about money from the spheres of source and kind, to allow the energy of supply to flow into our lives without unduly worrying about it beyond being sure our expenditures do not overcome our purse. Similarly, when we are asked to be generous to those who need some of this green energy, it is well to think of that mental image of energy in motion, and be generous stewards of whatever wealth we, 305, Chapter 10, Societal Issues have.